For example, if you fell into a social media black hole when you woke up, you could make a deliberate point of making lunch plans with a real-life friend or going for an evening walk without your phone. Take notes. The breakup includes prompts and questions for you to answer. If you're the journaling type, I encourage you to create a special phone breakup notebook so that by the end of this experiment, you'll have a written record of your thoughts to look back on. You could also write your answers as a series of emails or letters to yourself. Seek further instructions. Given how quickly technology changes, I am deliberately not going into nitty-gritty detail about how to change specific settings. If you're confused, do an internet search and include your smartphone model. Or just find the nearest 9-year-old and have her do it for you. Start with the personal. We're going to focus on the ways we use our phones in our personal lives, as opposed to for work or school purposes. This is for two reasons. First, it's low-hanging fruit. Many people excuse their phone habits by claiming that they need to check their phones all the time for work. But are you really checking for work? Or are you checking for work by looking at your Instagram feed? Second, any change we make to our personal use of our phones is likely to affect our work use as well. If you fix your personal relationship with your phone, you may find that a better professional relationship with it falls into place too. Invite other people. You're going to have more fun, and your new relationship is more likely to stick if you do the breakup with another person or people. I encourage you to recruit a friend or family member or roommate or colleague or book club and go through the breakup together. That way you can use the book's questions as conversational prompts and keep each other on track. Whenever possible, people should encourage other people to join them and make an event out of it. Like dieting, it's easier when you make the change to healthy eating with your partner or family. Sarah. There is nothing wrong with mindless distraction. There are times when zoning out on your phone is exactly what you want to do. What is problematic, and what we're trying to avoid, is letting a state of mindless distraction become our default. And last, but not least, the point is not to punish yourself. We're trying to resolve discrepancies between how we say we want to live our lives and how we are actually living our lives. Sure, there may be some uncomfortable moments along the way, but ultimately, breaking up with your phone should make you feel good. If you start feeling like all you're doing is saying no to yourself, then take a step back to regroup. Our goal isn't abstinence. It's consciousness. Why a technology triage? When phone breakups fail, it's usually due to a lack of preparation. As we've touched on, people tend to try to change their relationships with their phones without first asking themselves what they actually want their relationships with their phones to be. They start with a vague goal. I want to spend less time on my phone. Without specifying what they're actually trying to change or accomplish, or identifying why they reach for their phones to begin with. Then they try to go cold turkey and end up feeling discouraged and powerless when it doesn't work. This is the equivalent of dumping someone because you say you want a better relationship, but when pressed, admitting that you actually have no idea what that better relationship would look like. If you don't take the time to figure that out, you are highly likely to end up in a relationship that's just as unsatisfying or unhealthy as the one that you just got out of. The all-or-nothing approach to smartphones also totally ignores the fact that, as we've discussed before, there are many good things about our phones. The point of breaking up with our phones isn't to deprive ourselves of the benefits of modern technology. It's to set boundaries so that we can enjoy the good parts of our phones while also protecting ourselves from the bad. That's why we need to do a technology triage. In this stage, we'll use mindfulness and apps to gather data about our current relationships with our phones so that we can identify what's working, what's not, and what we want to change. Our guiding question. We've talked about how, both literally and metaphorically, our lives are what we pay attention to. So please take a moment right now to answer this question. What do you want to pay attention to? I encourage you to continue to come back to this question throughout the course of our 30 days together and beyond. Use it to ground yourself anytime you feel yourself reaching for your phone, or any other moment when you feel as if you've lost your way. I want to pay attention to my surroundings. I want to notice nature and art and my own feelings. Emily. I want to pay attention to friends. When we're experiencing something together, like a movie or a meal, I want to be fully present. Lauren. Use your lock screen as a reminder. You may want to write, "What do you want to pay attention to?" on a piece of paper. Take a photo of it and set it as the lock screen for your phone. You could even take a photo of someone you love holding the piece of paper. That way, whenever you reach for your phone, you'll be reminded to check in with yourself first. Schedule it. Before we officially begin, I'd also like to take advantage of what is hopefully a high level of motivation to get you to pick a date for your trial separation. Right now. I'm serious. Go get your calendar and schedule it. If you follow my suggested plan and start your breakup on a Monday, you'll be doing the trial separation sometime during the third weekend of the breakup. I recommend Friday evening to Saturday evening because it sets a nice tone for the rest of the weekend, but Saturday to Sunday is fine too. And if that weekend doesn't work for you, you can pick another 24-hour period. Yes, you can change this date later if you want or need to. The point is to increase the chances that you'll actually do it, rather than just listen to it, by putting a date in your calendar way ahead of time. It'll also give you time to prepare. I'll give you lots of help preparing for the trial separation. We will hold each other, and it will be okay. In fact, you may be surprised by how much you enjoy it. Also, consider adding the entire breakup to your calendar, either on or off your phone. If you don't feel like adding 30 individual events to your calendar, set a single reminder, something along the lines of "breakup with my phone," to repeat each day for 30 days. Day 1, Monday. Download a tracking app. The first step in our technology triage is to compare the amount of time we think we're spending on our phones to how much time we're actually spending on our phones. Start by jotting down your answers to these questions. If you had to guess, how many times a day do you think you pick up your phone? How much time do you estimate that you spend on it per day? Next, download a time tracking app that will automatically monitor how often you reach for your phone and how long you spend on it. I'll go over the recommended resources at the end of this audiobook. Don't try to change anything yet about your behavior. Our goal is just to gather data. We'll touch base about your results in a few days. Realizing the disparity between how much time I thought I spent on the phone each day and how much time I actually spent on it was huge. Dustin. Day 2, Tuesday. Assess your current relationship. Now that you've got a tracking app up and running in the background, pull out a notebook or create a new email message to yourself and write a few sentences in response to the following questions. What do you love about your phone? What don't you love about your phone? What changes do you notice in yourself, positive or negative, when you spend a lot of time on your phone? Depending on how old you are, you can also ask yourself if you've noticed any changes since you got a smartphone to begin with. I love having the world's information at my fingertips. The ability to answer any question or find my way to any place is pretty remarkable. But it is too easy to pull it out and start reading news and checking things, when previously I would have just observed the world around me. The times I force myself to do that, I always notice something interesting that I'd otherwise miss. Connor. My attention span has significantly lessened. I don't make an effort to plan ahead, either for directions or info, because I know I can always look it up in the last minute. My memory is weaker. I have noticed physical discomfort from looking down on my phone and texting a lot. Neck, thumbs, wrists. Aaron. Next, imagine yourself a month from now, at the end of your breakup. What would you like your new relationship with your phone to look like? What would you like to have done or accomplished with your extra time? What would you like someone to say if you asked them to describe how you'd changed? Write your future self a brief note or email describing what success would look like and or congratulating yourself for achieving it. I would like myself to not be so tied to my phone, to not spend hours scrolling through pages of people I don't really know. I would like to have used the time I've gained back for something useful, started a new hobby, gone to an extra gym class. I'd like my boyfriend, friends, to say that I am much more engaged in everything, less distracted. Savan. Day 3, Wednesday. Start paying attention. The next step of the technology triage is to continue your mindfulness practice by paying attention to how and when you use your phone and how you feel when you do so. Over the next 24 hours, try to notice situations in which you nearly always find yourself using your phone. For example, waiting in line, in the elevator, in the car. Also note the first time in the morning and the last time in the evening that you typically look at your phone. How your posture changes when using your phone. Your emotional state right before you reach for your phone. For example, bored, curious, anxious, happy, lonely, excited, sad, loving, and so on. Your emotional state right after you use your phone. Do you feel better? Worse? Did your phone satisfy whatever emotional need caused you to reach for it? How and how often your phone grabs your attention, via notifications, texts, and the like. How you feel while you are using your phone, as well as how you feel when you realize that you don't have your phone. The point here is to start to become aware of when and how your phone triggers your brain to release dopamine and cortisol, and what you feel like when that happens. Very generally speaking, cravings are a desire for dopamine. Dopamine itself feels exciting, and cortisol feels like anxiety. I'd also like you to pay attention to moments, either on or off your phone, when you feel some combination of engaged, energized, joyful, effective, and purposeful. When that happens, notice what you were doing, whom you were with, and whether your phone was involved. How and when other people use their phones, and how it makes you feel. Lastly, I'd like you to choose several moments in your day when you seem to pick up your phone the most often, and see if you can identify a consistent trigger that makes you repeat this habit. For example, maybe you check your phone first thing in the morning because you're anxious, or maybe it's just because it's on your bedside table. Maybe you check your phone in the elevator because everyone else is also checking their phone. Maybe you check it at work because you're bored with whatever you're supposed to be doing. We're not trying to put a judgment on any of these triggers. We're just trying to become aware of them so that we can begin to identify patterns. As a warm-up, try this slightly modified version of a phone meditation exercise suggested by David Levy, author of Mindful Tech, How to Bring Balance to Our Digital Lives. First, notice how you feel right now. How is your breathing? Your posture? Your sense of focus? Your general emotional state? Now, take out your phone and hold it in your hand without unlocking the screen. Notice any changes in your breathing, posture, focus, and emotional state. Next, actually unlock the screen and open one of the apps you use the most frequently. For example, email, social media, or the news. Spend a few moments scrolling through the feed. If you're looking at email, answer a message. Then scan yourself again for any changes. Lastly, turn off the phone and put it away, out of sight. How do you feel? Is anything different? Personally, I've noticed that while it can initially be pleasant, I hardly ever feel better after I use my phone, an observation that has helped me catch myself when I'm about to pick it up out of habit. I notice that I'm usually feeling a little anxious before I pick it up. It's not that 5 minutes earlier I was anxious. It's that for whatever reason I'm picking up the phone and feel anxious in that moment of picking it up to check it. Then I usually relax once I've logged in and checked email and Facebook. Why? Jenny. Create a physical prompt. To help you notice when you reach for your phone, put a rubber band or hair tie around your phone or a piece of tape or a sticker on the back. That way, anytime you reach for your phone, you'll feel the prompt and be reminded to pay attention. You'll probably need the reminder for only a few days. After a while, the noticing will become more automatic. You can also do something visual, such as changing the image on your lock screen to a picture of a piece of paper that says, "Notice," or "Why did you pick me up?" Day 4, Thursday. Take stock and take action. By now, we've tracked our phone usage for a few days. Now that we've gathered this data, let's analyze it. 1. Look at the results from the tracking app you installed. The tracking data may not be entirely accurate, but that's okay. We're just trying to get a general sense of how our guesses match up to reality. How many times per day did you pick up your phone, and how much time did you spend on it? How does this compare to your guesses? What, if anything, surprised you? I've been horrified by the data that the tracking app has been providing. Yesterday I picked up my phone 81 times and spent over 2 hours on it. Samantha. 2. Notice what you've noticed. Next, think about what you've noticed over the past 24 hours about when and why you typically use your phone. What did you notice about how and how often your phone interrupts you or does something that grabs your attention? How did these interruptions make you feel? Interruptions happen all the time. All the time. They generally feel sort of like a coffee buzz, energizing, edgy, and ephemeral. Josh. What did you notice about how you felt physically and emotionally before, during, and after you used your phone, and during times when you were separated from it? For example, did you feel relaxed, tense, excited, anxious, or some other emotion? What did you pick up on about how your phone affects your levels of dopamine and cortisol? Before reaching for the phone, I feel a slight twinge of discomfort, of wanting something, like I might feel if I were sitting at the kitchen table and suddenly thought of food, even though I wasn't hungry. I also feel a slightly giddy sense of anticipation, like I used to when I went to the post office with my mom, hoping a pen pal had written. Jessica. What did you notice about the moments when you felt you were in a state of flow, that is, some combination of engaged, energized, joyful, effective, and purposeful? What were you doing? Whom were you with? Was your phone involved? It sounds so simple, but I felt all those things when I was weeding the garden. I love being outdoors, and I sure felt effective and purposeful as I watched the pile of weeds grow larger. My phone was only involved when I took a picture to send to some friends who are equally nerdy about plants. Jenny. How did you feel when you saw other people on their phones? I really hate the shifting of etiquette that has made it okay for people to use their phones during the workday, under the guise that they're having frantic work-related exchanges, when obviously it's all personal. Beth. Putting this all together, what patterns did you notice? What, if anything, surprised you?
I use the phone mostly when I'm bored, going from one place to another or sitting down on my own, or at night when sitting on the couch, while watching TV or procrastinating. I don't think much about it in the moment, but in hindsight, I realize it's a lot of time I could be using on more productive things. Bernardo. 3. Create your first speed bump. One of the most effective ways to regain control over our phones is to build speed bumps, small obstacles that force us to slow down. By creating a pause between our impulses and our actions, speed bumps give us the chance to change course if we decide we want to take a different route. We'll be experimenting with a lot of mental and physical speed bumps over the course of our breakup. The first is an exercise that I call WWW, which is short for What For, Why Now, and What Else. You might want to consider putting WWW on your lock screen as a reminder. WWW. What for, why now, and what else? Anytime you notice that you are about to reach for your phone, take a second to ask yourself, what for? What are you picking up your phone to do? For example, to check your email, browse Amazon, order dinner, kill time, and so on. Why now? Why are you picking up your phone now instead of later? The reason might be practical. I want to take a photo. Situational, I'm in the elevator, or emotional, I want a distraction. What else? What else could you do right now besides check your phone? If you do your W's and then decide that you really do want to use your phone right now, that's totally fine. The point is simply to give yourself a chance to explore your options for that particular moment, so that if and when you turn your attention to your phone, it's the result of a conscious decision. Identifying your goal ahead of time also prevents an impulse to share a photo on social media from devolving into another 30 minutes spent absent-mindedly scrolling through your feed. Day 5. Friday. Delete social media apps. As we've discussed, social media is like junk food. Binging on it makes us feel bad. And yet, once we start consuming it, it's really hard to stop. So let's take control of it. First, take a moment to think about which social media platforms you use the most. Then ask yourself how much money per week you would be willing to pay for each of them. Seriously, think about this for a second. Then, when you've got a number in mind, think back on a recent experience that was really rewarding or fun, such as spending time with a group of your best friends or doing something that you love. If we could go back in time, how much would I have to pay you to get you to knowingly miss out on that experience? Got it? If you're like most people, the amount you'd pay for social media is quite low. Most people's answers hover somewhere around $1 a week per platform. In contrast, most people's rates for knowingly missing out on fun were much, much higher. One obvious conclusion is that we value social media much less than we do real-life fun, and that we should probably prioritize the latter. Fair enough. But for some people, social media is an enjoyable tool that makes them feel connected to friends, family, and the world around us. Ideally, we'd be able to use social media in moderation, enjoying the good parts without risking the bad. But this is particularly difficult to do on our phones because, as we've discovered, social media apps are specifically designed to suck us in. Thankfully, there's an easy way to fight back. Delete all social media apps from your phone. I'm serious. Do it now. Put your finger on an app icon until it starts jiggling, and then press the X in the corner. The app, panicking, will respond with a manipulative question. Are you really sure you want to delete me and all my data? Say yes and then shake your head in disgust. Everyone knows that Facebook didn't really delete any of your data. It's all still lurking in the cloud, ready to be used against you, and reinstalled, downloaded at any time. If you are hesitating, let's be clear about two things. One, this is not an irreversible decision. Ideally, I would like you to keep these apps off your phone until we reach the makeup part of our experiment, at which point I will provide suggestions for how to create a healthier relationship with social media. But I'm not the boss of you. Two, you can still check social media whenever you want. I'm not trying to get you off of social media entirely. I just want you to check it through your phone or computer's internet browser instead of on an app. The point, again, is to create speed bumps. Browser versions of social media platforms often have fewer features than their apps and are clunkier to use. So they provide lots of opportunities to ask yourself whether you really want to be checking social media at that moment. If you decide that you do, that's fine. But check it in a structured way. Define your purpose ahead of time. Are you posting something? Looking for something specific? Just scrolling for fun? And decide how long you want to spend. You may even want to set a timer. Then, when you're done, log out and close the window so that it won't open automatically the next time you launch the browser. In short, just do it. Delete the apps for now. You will be okay. I promise. In fact, many people have told me that, in terms of breaking their addiction to their phones, this was one of the most useful things they did. Also, here's an interesting psychological trick for you. Researchers have found that the vocabulary you use to describe a new habit has a strong effect on the likelihood that you'll stick with it. To be specific, saying that you do or don't do something, framing an action as part of your identity, is much more effective than saying that you have to or can't do something. For example, saying, I go to the gym 5 days a week, compared to saying, I have to go to the gym 5 days a week. This is a great opportunity to experiment with this trick. Right now, you are a person who does not have social media apps on your phone. So when you feel the urge to open or reinstall one of the apps, don't try to resist it by saying that you can't or aren't allowed to do so. Instead, simply describe your current reality. I do not keep social media apps on my phone. This simple shift can make a surprising difference. Oh, and lastly, make a point of taking some of the time you usually spend on social media and spending it with people you care about instead. Offline. Call a friend. Invite someone to coffee. Have a party. Yes, you can use social media to help you organize. Notice how you feel afterward, especially compared to how you usually feel after spending time on social media. Instagram and Facebook are the two apps that really suck me in. I've deleted them from my phone and only checked them through Safari. This has made a huge difference. Savan. I really liked some of these apps, but the weird thing is that I don't miss them at all. Vanessa. What to do if you're afraid you'll forget your passwords? I'm going to be suggesting that you experiment with deleting lots of apps during our time together. If you're like me, you may find yourself hesitating. Not because you necessarily care about the app, but because you're worried that you won't be able to find, remember your password if you decide to reinstall it. The solution is to finally do what all those internet security people have been telling us for years, and sign up for a password manager. Password managers are apps that store all your passwords. They can also generate new ones for you that are harder to break. You set one master password for the password manager, and then, when you want to sign into a site, app, the manager will do it for you. This makes it less likely that your data will be hacked, and also will give you the freedom to play around with deleting things without worrying. Social media and FOMO. If you delete social media apps from your phone, you are likely going to miss some posts. But instead of directing your FOMO toward what you think you might miss if you reduce the amount of time you spend on social media, try focusing on what you are definitely missing when you spend time on social media, which is to say, the rest of your life. In other words, missing out on stuff that happens only on your phone is probably a good thing. Also, if anything big happens, you're still going to hear about it. If you're worried about missing invitations to real-life things that are sent via social media, then simply make a point of checking your account from your desktop once or twice a day. Some social media apps also allow you to customize what types of email notifications you'd like to receive, so you can let actual invitations still come through. Lastly, spending less time on social media will help prevent a different type of FOMO, the jealousy that occurs when you compare your own life to someone else's social media feed. The irony, of course, is that most people's feeds do not accurately represent the proportion of their lives they actually spend skiing, surfing, sitting in hot tubs with models. Also, many people with enormous social media followings are actually paid to glamorize their lives. If someone's existence looks too good to be true, it probably is. Day 6, Saturday. Come back to real life. If you use your phone less, you're going to end up with more time. Unless you have some sense of how you want to be spending this reclaimed time, you're likely to feel anxious and possibly a bit depressed, and you'll be at risk of sliding right back into your old habits. That's why we need to get back in touch with what makes us happy in our offline lives. We're going to start with a few prompts. Just jot down whatever comes to mind. I've always loved to. I've always wanted to. When I was a kid, I was fascinated by. If I had more time, I would like to. Some activities that I know put me into flow are. People I would like to spend more time with include. Being out in nature brings me joy. Swimming in the sea or a lake makes me really happy. So does spending time with people I love. Danielle. Once you're done, use your answers to those questions to make a list of several specific, fun, off-phone things you could do over the next few days, remainder of our experiment. For example, do a crossword in a cafe. Go on a day trip. Take a hike. Sign up for a class. Plan a game night. Go to a museum. Draw something. Write a short story. Make a date with a friend. Cook something interesting. Our goal here is to come up with ideas and plans for fun things ahead of time, so that when you find yourself with free time, you'll be less likely to reach for your phone. I've noticed that when I'm really busy and stressed, I get into such a routine that I don't have any fun stuff planned for my downtime, so I just turn to the phone because there aren't readily apparent alternatives. Valerie. Day 7, Sunday. Get physical. Most of us weren't very good at mind-body integration even before smartphones came into the picture, and with every screen we add to our lives, we're only getting worse. So today, make some time to get back in touch with your body by doing something physical and enjoyable. The point is to remember that you are more than a brain sitting on top of a body. And, as a side note, there's strong evidence suggesting that exercise that increases blood flow also helps to strengthen your cognitive control. Some ideas. Go for a walk without your phone. Pay attention to your breath and the feeling of your body as it moves. Do yoga. Play catch. Go to a park and join a game of something. Get a massage. Get in touch with your body by having someone else get in touch with your body. Play one of those video games that require you to jump around a lot. If you usually listen to music while you exercise, try turning it off for a bit and tuning in to your body and breath. Turn the music back on when the sound of your exhausted panting becomes demoralizing. To practice, turn off this audiobook
Take a deep breath and slowly stretch your arms above your head. Bring them back down as you exhale. Notice how it feels. I took a dance class and was amazed by how it felt to remember that my body can do things other than just walk and sit. It made me want to get out of my head and into my body more often. Elizabeth. Heads up. Get an alarm clock. In the next stage of our breakup, I'm going to ask you to banish your phone from your bedroom. A lot of you are going to breeze on through without doing it. Why? Because you use your phone as your alarm clock. But think about it. If your phone is your alarm clock, you are guaranteeing that your phone will be the first thing you touch when you get up. So please take a second to prepare for the impending banishment. Find, or buy, an alarm clock that is not your phone. Week 2. Changing your habits. The difference between technology and slavery is that slaves are fully aware that they are not free. Nassim Nicholas Taleb. In his excellent book, The Power of Habit, journalist Charles Duhigg defines a habit as a choice that we deliberately make at some point and then stop thinking about, but continue doing, often every day. As he describes it, every habit is a loop made up of three parts. 1. A cue, also called a trigger, a situation or an emotion that tells your brain to go into autopilot mode and let a behavior unfold. 2. A response, the automatic behavior, that is, the habit. 3. A reward, something that your brain likes that helps it remember the habit loop in the future. For example, you're feeling bored one day and see your phone on the table, the emotional and physical cue, so you reach for your phone, the response, and are distracted and entertained, the reward. Your brain associates your phone with the alleviation of boredom, and it isn't long before you find yourself reaching for your phone whenever you're faced with even a moment of downtime. Habits can be helpful. When a task or decision becomes automatic, it frees our brains to think about other things. Imagine how hard it would be to walk home if you had to concentrate on every single step. But habits can also be harmful and can lead to addictions. For example, if your brain learns to associate the end of a meal with a cigarette. Regardless of whether they're helpful, harmful, or neutral, habits are extremely difficult to break. What's more, once a habit has crossed the line to an addiction, it can be triggered by cues that are so subtle that we don't even notice them. In a 2008 study published in PLOS One, researchers from the University of Pennsylvania's Center for Studies of Addiction showed images of drug-related cues, such as crack pipes and chunks of cocaine, to 22 recovering cocaine addicts as they lay in a brain scanner. Despite the fact that the images were shown for 33 milliseconds, that's roughly one-tenth of the time it takes to blink, the reward centers of the subjects' brains lit up in the same way they did when the drug paraphernalia was visible on the screen for a longer, perceptible amount of time. That's the bad news. The good news is that while habits can't be eradicated entirely, they can be changed. The easiest way to start is to make adjustments to our lives and environments so that we avoid things that trigger our habits, and to make decisions ahead of time about how we're going to act when we encounter particular situations that we know are likely to trigger us. So that's what we're going to focus on this week. I feel like my willpower alone should be enough to change, break my habits. But I know from struggling with previous addictions that willpower alone is insufficient. Ben. Day 8, Monday. Say no to notifications. Remember the famous experiment where the Russian physiologist Ivan Pavlov conditioned dogs to salivate whenever they heard a bell? He did this by ringing a bell every time he fed them, so that, thanks to dopamine,
The dogs began to associate the sound of the bell with the promise of food. Eventually, Pavlov could get the dogs to drool in anticipation any time they heard a bell. This is exactly what happens to us when we enable push notifications, the alerts that show up on our home and lock screens countless times per day. Notifications use our brain's natural ability to associate cues with rewards and our anxiety over uncertainty to get us to compulsively check our phones. Every time you hear or see a notification, you know that there's something new and unpredictable waiting for you, two qualities that we are hardwired to crave. As a result, not only are notifications nearly impossible to resist, but over time they create a Pavlovian response. We descend into a state of anticipation, anxiety, and therefore distraction, anytime we're even near our phones. Indeed, the mere presence of a smartphone on the table has been shown to have a negative impact on closeness, connection, and the quality of conversation, not to mention worsen people's performances of tasks that require focused attention. Push notifications can even make us hallucinate. According to a 2017 study at the University of Michigan, more than 80% of college students have experienced phantom vibrations or calls. Notifications are also a very effective way to hijack your attention for profit. In 2015, users who enabled push notifications launched an app an average of 14.7 times per month, whereas users who did not only launched an app 5.4 times per month, reports Localytics, a marketing and analytics platform, in a company blog post titled, "The Year That Push Notifications Grew Up." In other words, users who opted in to push messages averaged three times more app launches than those who opted out. In summary, every ding and vibration from our phones triggers chemical reactions in our brains that pull us away from what we are doing, or the person we are with, and compel us to check our phones, usually for someone else's benefit. Push notifications turn our phones into slot machines and reinforce the very habit loops that we are trying to change. They are evil and must be destroyed. Do it now. Go into your phone's notification settings and turn off all notifications, except for phone calls and, if you want, messaging apps and your calendar. You don't have to keep these notifications turned off permanently, but it's important to start by reducing them to a bare minimum. Why? Because then you know that whatever notifications you decide to turn back on are notifications that you actually want to get. Messaging apps are distracting, but they have the option of staying because they represent real-time communication with live human beings. The calendar can stay so that you don't blame me for missing a doctor's appointment. Then, whenever you install a new app and your phone asks if you would like to enable its notifications, simply say no. Notes and tips. Some people find that they check certain apps more often when their notifications are off than when they're on. If this happens to you, it's fine to re-enable those particular notifications. But I recommend waiting for a day or two before you do so. It's possible that your increased desire to check is a withdrawal symptom that, given time, will fade. Notifications don't just take the form of sounds and messages on your lock screen. They also are all those little red bubbles, badges, telling you about new messages or things that need to be updated. Turn those off, too. When I say turn off all notifications, I also mean disabling notifications for email, including the red bubble and the dings that announce the arrival of new messages. As an email addict myself, I can assure you, you're not going to forget to check it. The easiest way to do this is to simply turn off the fetch new data setting. This will stop your phone from checking email in the background. Speaking of email, take a moment to go into the settings of your social media accounts and customize your email notification settings so that you get email alerts only for things you care about, such as invitations. You'll have to do this from your computer because I made you delete the apps. Sorry. You'll be able to see all these updates when you actually choose to log into your social media accounts. You're just making it less likely that an email check turns into a social media spiral. I have really enjoyed having my phone on silent and minimizing notifications. It has made a world of difference in making me more present. Crystal. Email pro tip. The power of VIPs. You may be resisting the idea of turning off your email notifications because there are certain people, like, say, your boss, whose emails you don't want to miss. The solution is to set up a list of very important people, and then to tell your phone that you only want to receive notifications for emails from those people. Day 9, Tuesday. The life-changing magic of tidying apps. As we talked about in The Wake Up, most of the personalization options on our phones are meant to increase, not reduce, the amount of time we spend on our devices. So let's personalize our phones with our own interests in mind. We'll start by deciding which apps we actually want to have on our phones. The first step is to sort your apps based on two criteria: their potential to steal your attention, that is, suck you in, and their potential to improve your daily life, make your life logistically easier, or bring you pleasure satisfaction. This should result in, at most, 6 categories of apps. 1. Tools. For example, maps, photos, camera, password manager, ride sharing, thermostat, security system, banking, weather, music, the actual phone. These are the apps that improve your life without stealing your attention. They are the only apps allowed to be on your home screen. Why? Because they serve a practical purpose without being tempting. They help you accomplish a specific task without any risk that you will be sucked into a black hole. Note that email, games, shopping sites, and social media all have black hole potential and thus do not get to be on your home screen. I also recommend not letting news apps onto your homepage. Internet browsers are a judgment call. If you find yourself with more apps than can fit on one page, prioritize them according to how often you want to be using them. You can relocate the rest into an overflow folder on the same screen, or, if you really want to minimize temptation, put all of your apps into folders so that their icons become too small to even read. And remember, your home screen does not need to be full. How to organize apps. To move an app, tap and hold its icon and then drag it to its new location. To put it on a different page, drag it past the edge of the screen. To create a folder, drag one app's icon on top of another app's icon and release. This will create a folder, which you can then rename. 2. Junk food apps. For example, social media, news apps, shopping apps, internet browsers, messaging apps, real estate apps, games, email. These are the apps that are fun or useful in limited quantities, but that are hard to stop using once you start. They sometimes can be life-improving, but they also threaten to suck you in. The trick is to decide whether they steal your attention more than they improve your life, or if they improve your life more than they threaten to steal your attention. If an app's risks outweigh its benefits, delete it. If you hesitate, remember that you can always reinstall it. If your enjoyment of the app outweighs its risk, relocate it to your phone's second screen and hide it in a folder, ideally with a title that reminds you to think before you open it. For most people, email qualifies as a junk food app. Dating goes into a subfolder titled Ugh. Daniel. Undecided? Some apps, including most social media and dating apps, can straddle the line between junk food and the next category, slot machine apps. If you're on the fence about which category an app falls into, Delete it for a few days and see how it feels.
3. Slot machine apps. For example, social media, dating apps, shopping apps, games. Every app on our phones is a dopamine trigger, but slot machine apps are the worst. These are the apps that don't improve your life and steal your attention. Signs that an app is a slot machine junk food app. You feel a sense of anticipation when you open it. You find it hard to stop using it. After you use it, you feel disappointed, unsatisfied, or disgusted with yourself. Slot machine apps suck. Delete them. What to do about games? If you find games problematic, try this strategy, suggested to me by someone who loves them. First, delete your games. Then, anytime you want to play one of them, reinstall it. When you're done playing, delete it again. Repeat as needed. Note, you can also use this technique for dating apps. Just reinstall them when you feel like swiping. It's too easy to become a slave to a game if it stays on your phone. Most games have no ending, just endlessly new levels that are progressively harder. Better to enjoy it for a moment and let it go. Dustin. 4. Clutter. For example, the QR reader I installed in 2012 and haven't looked at since. These are the apps that you never actually use. They don't steal your attention, but they also don't improve your life. What you do with these apps is likely to reflect your approach toward your real-life junk. Some people will find it easy to recognize their irrelevance and delete them. Other people will hide them in a folder on the third page of their phones and, like overflowing closets, continue to ignore their existence. I will leave it to you to guess which technique I endorse. 5. Utility apps. There are also some apps that serve some practical purpose, but don't improve your daily life enough to be qualified as full-on tools. For example, Find iPhone, the app that communicates with my washing machine via mysterious beeps and then tells me what's wrong with it. Keep these utility apps in a folder on your third page. Oddly, moving the App Store off my home screen has been lovely. I hate seeing that things need to be updated all of the time. It feels like a never-ending to-do list. Felicia. 6. The undeletables. There are some apps that you simply can't delete because your phone won't let you, which is a total dick move if you ask me. You can hide them in a folder on your third page with a title of your choosing. Folders. A force for good. With the possible exception of your home screen, I want you to put your apps into folders, even if it means that much of your screen is empty. The point of the folders is not just organization, though it certainly does scratch a certain OCD itch. The point is to protect yourself from yourself. If you put apps into folders, their icons become so small that when you swipe over to that page, you can't immediately tell which apps are where. This means that instead of opening an app just because you happen to see its icon, that is, reacting, you have to proactively want to open the app. This helps promote the habit, which I highly recommend, of launching apps by typing their names into the search bar, rather than by scrolling through your apps and being tempted by whatever else you see along the way. It also prevents the common habit of opening up one app and then getting swept into your personal app loop that you mindlessly cycle through every time you pick up your phone. The power of grayscale. If you've tidied your apps and put them into folders and still find your phone too tempting, try switching your phone's display from color to grayscale, black and white. It will make your phone look like a Xerox copy of itself, which turns out to be a very unattractive effect. Phone hack. If you have so many apps that the idea of sorting them all seems overwhelming, open your phone's settings and go to the battery page. You should be able to find a list of all the apps you've opened recently,
as well as what percentage of your battery power they've consumed. This will tell you which apps you're using the most and give you a good starting point. The menu bar. Most people never think to touch their menu bars. Their position at the bottom of the screen makes it seem like they can't be changed. But menu bars are indeed customizable. So let's customize them. If you haven't already, take your email out of the menu bar and banish it to an interior page, ideally in a folder. If there are other attention-stealing apps in your menu bar, like messages or an internet browser, move them too. You can leave those slots empty if you'd like. Alternatively, choose several tool apps such as the phone or your password manager to which you'd like to have particularly easy access and move them to the menu bar. Your new phone. By the end of our personalization process, you should be left with the phone equivalent of a Container Store catalog. I hope that it will make you feel similarly soothed. Menu bar. The chosen few. Home screen. Tools. Second screen. Curated junk food apps. Email. Third screen. Utilities. Undeletables. Clutter. Just go ahead and delete these. You've come this far. Deleted. Slot machine apps, plus every junk food app that sucks you in more often than it serves a purpose or brings you joy. Tidying my phone and making it seem less cluttered gave me peace, both aesthetically and also in terms of distraction. With only apps that I need on my phone, I'm less likely to open it up and scroll mindlessly. Michael. Day 10. Wednesday. Change where you charge it. Now that we've reorganized our phones to minimize temptation, we're going to do the same thing for our off-phone environments, starting with one of the biggest problem spots for many people, the bedroom. Many of us complain about automatically checking our phones first thing in the morning and right before bed at night, and in the middle of the night, for that matter. Well, of course we're doing this. We're sleeping within arm's reach of our phones. The easiest way to break this habit is to make it harder to reach for your phone while you're in bed. And the easiest way to do that is to create a charging station for your phone and other internet-enabled mobile devices that isn't in your bedroom. Or, at very least, that's not right next to your bed. If you haven't already gotten a hold of a non-phone alarm clock, please do so now. This does not mean that you can't check your phone, internet-enabled devices, during these times if you want to, or that you have failed in some way if you find yourself standing alone next to an outlet at 2 a.m., squinting down at your phone's tiny screen. The point is just to change checking your phone in the morning and evening from an automatic habit to a deliberate choice. So do it now. Pick a new charging spot. As soon as you get home, or right now if you're already there, take the charger from your bedroom and plug it into your new charging station. Then remove all extra chargers from your bedroom and store them in a different room. Or, if you live in a studio or dorm room, hide them in a drawer. You are simply a person who does not charge their phone in the room where they sleep. End of story. For the best results, the rest of your family should do this as well. All phones should be charged in the same spot, so that it's easy to tell if anyone is cheating. One way to get kids, roommates, partners, parents on board is to get a jar, your phone bank, and establish a fine for anyone caught cheating. At the same time, mutually agree on fun things you could do together that don't involve phones, such as going to dinner together. Then, when your phone bank is full, use the money to have one of those experiences. If you encounter resistance, tell your antagonist that you are trying to reduce your smartphone use so that you can be more connected to the people you care about, including them. In an ideal world, you wouldn't see your phone at all until you consciously decided to check it. One technique is to charge your phone while you're at your desk or in class, and then keep it in your bag or coat pocket overnight so that you don't encounter it until you leave the house. If you're worried that you'll miss an important call when your phone's in the other room, turn the ringer on. Just be sure that you've turned off notifications so that it's not constantly dinging at you. This essentially turns your smartphone into a landline and makes it possible to move freely around your home, apartment, room without keeping it strapped to your side. So tell me, where will your phone be sleeping tonight?